Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Titan Company Limited's Q1 FY26 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. C. K. Venkataraman, Managing Director, Titan Company Limited. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Venkataraman.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. It's been a very satisfying quarter for Titan Company across businesses, markets, and subsidiaries. And the results have been published, and the deck has also been up for review. So I will hand over for the questions to start.
We will now begin the question-and-answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Devanshu Bansal from Emkay Global. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Congratulations on a good margin performance across segments. First question is on growth for jewelry segment. The rest three quarters have a relatively higher base, obviously, because there was 900 basis points duty cut that happened. Do you foresee some growth moderation in the rest of FY26, or we should be able to sustain the momentum that we have seen in Q1?
Yeah, you're right, Devansh, that quarter two particularly had a higher base effect, has a higher base effect going forward because of last year's customs duty reduction and some deferment of sale from quarter one into quarter two because people were on the fence. So I think 22nd or 23rd July onwards, we saw that impact. So that is one factor. The other factors are, of course, we've been constantly using the leverage of ticket size growth and repeat customer base that has given us good results, even while gold prices are high. I'm not sure to what extent this should manifest in quarter three and quarter four, in as much as it may manifest. The base effect may manifest more in quarter two. But it's too early to conclude anything, and I would say that we started well in quarter two. Of course, we've had to advance the Festival of Diamonds, which has the studded activation, and that has helped us. So overall, I would wait and watch. I wouldn't necessarily come to any conclusion given the significant uncertainties that we are seeing every day due to external factors and therefore consequent impact on gold prices.
Fair enough. Thanks for this. Secondly, I wanted to understand on margins. There is indication that there is some 50 basis points of one-off in the jewelry segment for Q1, and there was some one-off in Q4 as well. Firstly, wanted to understand what is the nature of this and whether both these one-offs are expected to reverse in the rest of FY26. And subsequent margin question is also that if we exclude this one-off, there has been still a pretty robust margin performance as the mix was weaker due to lower studded and higher coin sales. So do you sort of see scope of beating the upper end of your margin band, which is 11%-11.5% in FY26?
So hi, Ashok here. So in this quarter, we had a benefit of 100 crore one time distributed equally between jewelry and watches. In watches division, we have some valuation of inventory, which we do annually, our runs, and that is what has led into this benefit. Every year, a small benefit does come because of the input costs and wages going up, but this time it was pretty marked. And that adjusts
watches division reported margin by almost 4%. You know, like 22-point-some% we have reported. You should think that 4% will be this one time, and actually this one time will reverse as we move forward. You know, in quarter two, quarter three, when that inventory which has got revalued get liquidated, it will hit the COGS, and to that extent, watch division has to kind of absorb this thing. As far as jewelry is concerned, we have about which accounts for about 50 basis points. This is also one-time outstanding hedging because of so much volatility in the market. There is MTM again sitting in our favor, and which will also, as these forwards and futures gets squared up in quarter two and quarter three, this will also reverse itself. So these are the two major reasons in this quarter which has benefited overall company as well as jewelry and watches in particular. As far as going forward is concerned, apart from these reversals which would happen in quarter two and quarter three, and several actions which are being taken by jewelry division in particular about to tackle, you know, whatever pressure they have, but we will not say that we will operate at upper end or lower end. 11-11.5 still remains our guidance on which we are trying to work on.
Understood. Ashok, thanks for this. Just a small follow-up. So that Q4 gain that was there, that will also reverse in the coming quarters?
Quarter four,
There was some gain.
Quarter four, I don't think there was something very specific, and I'm trying to remember what exactly was it significant. I don't think anything was significant, but I'll just review that, and maybe during the call I will revert back. Okay?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for taking the question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avi Mehta from Macquarie Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, team. Thanks for the opportunity. I wanted to get your thoughts on the market share in the jewelry segment. You know, for the last few quarters, we've seen a situation where our same-store sales growth momentum has been lagging, you know, the other larger listed player. So wanted to know, how are you seeing this, and what do you envisage as the way forward? Is this something that is because of the size and it's expected? Would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. Hi, Avi. Ajoy here. See, I think given the construct of the jewelry market, it is a multipolar play. It is not just two players or three players fighting for share amongst each other, and therefore, it's not easy to conclude. There are at least 7-8 large national players. There are 8-10 large regional chains, and then there's a host of regional players who are selective to given cities or states or markets. Okay, so typically we believe we have, even last year we have gained market share, and we triangulate it in different ways. We look at overall market data, we look at our own tracks, we look at World Gold Council data, all of that. So to us, last financial year, we have gained market share. In some markets we may not have gained, in some other markets we have gained. So national picture, I'm telling you. In quarter one, our understanding is we have sustained market share when I look at the total market. This is after triangulating all these data points that I shared with you. And how it will play out, I don't know. But our base certainly is much, much higher. And therefore, in certain markets where our base is very, very high, and many of the other national players are kind of entering there on a small base, early entry, in those markets, it may suddenly look like our same-store growth, is it comparable to the same-store growth of some of those other players? But very often we see that it is possible that growth is there in many players, and some growth, some share is lost by regional players. So it becomes very difficult to assess. So when we look at it, we look at the market share on the total addressable market in that segment. Quarter one, summary, we have, I think, sustained share nationally. Last year, we had gained share marginally, I would say, in the previous year.
Oh, got it, Ajay. Ajay, where I'm coming from is this a case where the segment that we cater to is where we are gaining market share, or is it more a geography mix? That's the clarification that I wanted to understand more than just to follow up on that.
It's a geography mix,
okay.
I would say. And in a way, geography also leads to segment because certain geographies are more towards gold, some geographies are more towards studded, and some to higher value, some to lower value. So, but to answer your question simply, geography led is what I would say.
Got it. And just a follow up, you know, sorry, not a follow up, but just the second question that leads to it. From a margin point of view, now you have a range of 11 to 11.5. Wanted to understand, you know, is margin at all a lever to change, or which we need to evaluate to remain competitive, or you know, this is not the right approach when you look at the segment? So that is the last part.
So we are not constraining growth by way of trying to somehow keep a high margin. We have been very competitive and aggressive when it comes to gold rates. We have been very responsive in those markets. In fact, we have also consolidated a lot of that. We have also been quite competitive when it comes to introducing products, especially in the gold segment, at lower making charge and lower complexity. And we are seeing that product mix also play out in a particular way. We have introduced gold intensive studded products also. So many of these we have done, keeping in mind both consumer and competitive response. We have not held back on retail, let's say, expansion or renovations and, you know, increasing the footprint of our existing stores. And we have continued to invest in marketing in as much as it's needed. So none of our growth engines we are holding back on. And therefore, I don't know whether you're referring to whether we can do more of those and compromise some of the margin. We have not really gone out there and cut our investments in growth to kind of fund margin.
Very clear, Ajay. That's all from my side. I'll come back in the queue for the other question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Videsha Sheth from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Some of my questions have been answered, so just one from my side. With 9 carat also coming under the purview of hallmarking, how are you thinking of exposing multiple formats, multiple brands of yours, be it CaratLane or Mia, or maybe even have a separate brand? I understand that you've launched certain assortment under 9 carats and CaratLane and Mia last quarter, but just wanted to know where do you stand, or where will this caratage be focused on?
So Mia is still early days. CaratLane has done a lot more work on 9 carat, and I'd let Shaumin answer that.
Hi. We launched 9 carat diamond jewelry in the last Valentine, and it was kind of a response to the gold rate was spiraling upwards, and it was certainly putting a lot of pressure on the margin structure of the company. And we were also vacating price points, and CaratLane were predominantly playing between 30,000 to 40,000 rupees. And a lot of products which were at sub 30 moved away from that price band. So we needed to fix. So 9 carat, 14 carats are ways to sort of make sure there is enough and more range for the customer to look for. And since then, it was originally only online play. And thereafter, we started, placing in the limited number of stores. So far, we are seeing a very steady traction. The hesitation that we had, and we launched it even before 9 carat was hallmarked, meaning announcement of hallmarked happened only recently. But we have been seeing a steady growth of this. There are people who are buying the jewelry, 9 carat notwithstanding, diamond jewelry, and pretty comfortable with this. And we didn't see any resistance at all, whether it's online or offline. So our view is that with the gold price increasing, all those earlier resistance of customers towards caratage, I think, especially in the lower segment, which is not more on the adornment space, less on the, let's say, investment space, I think it's going to be the way. And we are banking on it, and therefore we are expanding it. In fact, we just decided that we'll be taking to all 300 stores very soon.
Okay. I understand it's early days, but do you believe it warrants a separate format, or would you be playing this through specifically through CaratLane and Mia only?
for CaratLane, I'll speak is that customers who are looking for price points, more often than not, it is in the gifting segment. So they come with a budget. And within that, I suppose if we have an offering, it plays out well. And 9 carat is basically addressing this issue of gifting, which we are not able to otherwise cater to after gold price went up so much. 14 carat was the initial step, and now 9 carat is the next step. So I suppose it is a segment we were actually, that is the segment CaratLane lost some customers below 30,000. It is in a way okay. Our effort to get back those customers in the category.
Yeah, but I don't think it needs a separate brand. Yeah. Even in Mia, as we roll it out, it is going to be under the same brand. But Mia also sells a little bit of silver. It's under Mia brand only. So I don't think it will require a separate brand or format. But it may have a greater play online, is my sense, because of the price point it can cater to.
Got it. And the second question was around studded jewelry. Any indication beyond, besides CaratLane, any indication on improvement of the studded ratio or studded assortment?
I didn't follow the question. What do you mean by any
Is there any indication of the overall studded portfolio growth picking up versus the 11% growth which we saw this quarter?
Well, we hope it will pick up. And already we... You know, we advanced our Festival of Diamonds, which had the offer that has given us good results in July. How it will play out for the rest of the quarters and year, we'll wait to see. We always target the good part, I'll tell you. The buyer growth on studded is actually better than the buyer growth in gold jewelry. I'm keeping coins aside. And that indicates that there are many more customers, new customers and new buyers in the market for studded relative to, let's say, gold. So that's a positive sign. Of course, how we leverage our repeat business and repeat buyers to also give us ticket size-led growth to complement this will determine how well we grow in the subsequent quarters.
Okay, and this buyer growth which you're referring to in studded being better versus plain gold, that would be inclusive of CaratLane or exclusive excluding CaratLane?
Excluding CaratLane. CaratLane is separately tracked.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tejas Shah from Avendus Spark. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. For a change, I'll start with watches and then eyewear. So watches delivered exceptional quarter. So what led to this growth and how should we think about sustainability of the same?
So it was, many things that we had been working on for many quarters kind of came to a pinnacle of results. Premiumization as well as in the volume side, a lot of work on mass fashionization, especially for brands like Sonata and Fast Track. So we've seen exceptional growth across channels, both retail as well as multi-brand and e-commerce. I think it was that was building up, and this quarter was probably, you know, where it all kind of came together very well. In terms of continuing, of course, this was an exceptional quarter. We are hoping quarter two will also be good, and festively we will wait and watch. But things are looking good and quite solid from a building block point of view.
Perfect. And on eyewear, despite store closures, we are delivering decent growth. So what's the strategy there going forward?
Yeah. Hi, this is Raghavan here. Yes, I'm in... We have been reimagining the eyewear business in terms of what is the CVP. So for us, the positioning of Titan Eye Plus is a multi-price and a multi-brand so that we are able to cater to a larger set of an audience. Right. So as far as store closures are concerned, stores which we believe are not performing well and stores which are not relevant are the ones which are being closed. So this is something which we will continue to do. Parallelly, we are also opening stores. So it is the stronger consumer value proposition and a greater shopper experience is what we believe is leading to a greater engagement with the brand.
Sure. And last one, if I may, given the U.S. tariff environment, Are you seeing any impact on demand, pricing, or sourcing strategies for the international jewelry business, especially in the US?
First quarter has gone pretty well. We were aware of the build-up towards the tariffs, and we had prepared everything on the ground to deal with it. And actually, we have done very well in the first quarter of FY26. But the current, signals are quite volatile, and we don't want to take any knee-jerk reaction with respect to pricing, because there are, the claims are at a bloated level, and we'll wait out August to end to see what finally develops. To finally, administer the price that we think we should, go with. So that's on the price. On the sourcing, and because the U.S. Share to our company sales is, just about 2% or a little more than that, it's not a deal breaker for us to, approach this in any knee-jerk fashion. We can just wait it out and calmly do that. As far as supply chain is concerned, the international business is becoming, jewelry business is becoming bigger and bigger for us. With our recent entry into the GCC in a bigger way through the new investment. The GCC business itself of jewelry will be very large soon, and that combined with the U.S. could top 6% or thereabouts of the company sales, and by itself it merits, independent of tariff advantages, it merits thinking about global supply chains, and let's say in those parts of the world. And that's the something that we are starting to think about and explore, but no concrete plan to share at the moment.
Okay. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Siddhant Dand from Goodwill. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I had a question regarding Teal. Could you speak more on the numbers, the scalability, the sustainability of this quarter's numbers, and the semiconductor business that we are doing?
Yeah, so Siddhant, hi, there are, three parts to the Teal business. One part is the manufacturing services business, where traditionally, our customers have been aerospace customers from outside India. And that sector is, starting to improve our ability to move up the value chain from parts to minor sub-assemblies has been successful over the last few years, and we're seeing more and more traction. For example, if you were to take a company like a Raytheon or a Pratt, our ability to move sideways into other parts of Raytheon, other parts of Pratt is giving us annuity businesses, and that business is actually an annuity business, and once you strike a deal after a year or year and a half of preparation, it's for many years. So that is a sustainable business, and we certainly expect to continue growing in the manufacturing services side. The second part is the automation solutions, which has got two parts. One is the traditional automation, where it's a bespoke automation and assembly and testing solutions, which we've been very good at both in India and outside India, and that continues to, it's not an annuity business, it's not that predictable, and but because of a decent mix between automotive, CPG, medical, and some other categories, we've built a certain predictability, and also the international versus domestic, a certain predictability about, and there's a lot of EV-related work that we are doing in that. The third is for a single large global customer, which uses the capabilities of the same automation solutions business, which is now, and it's also related to the recent acquisition of a company called Justec that Teal did some time back. And that's the third stream, which is more like a product business, but it uses the capabilities of the same automation services solutions division. So these are the three parts, and because they are very different from each other, in a way it also gives a good balancing mix to the predictable growth. We are very, very excited about the overall growth prospects of Teal because the, for example, Raytheon, we keep getting the best supplier award from Raytheon, and that's given to the top 10 or 15 suppliers out of 12,000 plus suppliers globally, and Teal is one of them. Therefore, the reputation that Teal has today for creating very high-end technology solutions and very reliable solutions is very strong. So from a sales growth point of view, we are very, very bullish. From a profitability, you know, I wouldn't comment about the future.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harit Kapoor from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening. So my first question was on the watches business again. So, you know, even adjusting for this 50 crores, this 18.5% EBIT margin is extremely strong and way ahead of our, you know, expected guidance. So just for the full year, you know, is it likely to be a higher profitability year for watches, or is there something sustainably that you think is going to be at the higher end now? That's my first question.
I think we are hopeful that mid-teen kind of number we should able to deliver full year basis for FY26. Yeah?
Got it. And just to follow up on this, you know, analog seems to be doing, you know, significantly better. You know, there's not much of talk of wearables in your release now. Is there a shift in the market or a mean reversion that's happened, you know, towards analog? If you could just give some sense on that.
Yeah, this is Suparna here. So analog for us is doing really well, as you saw the numbers. Smartwatches have gone through a big correction. I think a lot of it happened last year in calendar year 24. It continues to be somewhat subdued right now. A lot of correction in terms of oversupply, undercutting of price, etc. We were relatively better off. So we are at this point maintaining and gaining market share and coming out with newer products which should do well. But yes, the very overheated kind of growth that we've seen in smartwatches in calendar years 21, 22 and 23, that phase is over now.
Got it. And the last question was on Tanishq. You know, over the last two quarters, you've seen a slower rate of store expansion, even this quarter, three stores. So just wanted to get a sense, is this year going to be slightly more back-ended? How do we see that?
Now, plans are broadly similar. It's probably just timing issues of execution. Quarter one, I agree with you, was slower than our own plans. How much of it we'll catch up in quarter two, can't say. But our plans for the year are pretty strong, and usually we try to squeeze in many more stores just before festive season, which happens to be earlier this year in October. So I'm hopeful that quarter two we should be able to catch up on some of the...
Also, I'm not sure whether the square feet thing is that apparent. No?
Yeah.
For example, just to, you know, illustrate, like I was personally there in the small town Brahmapur in Odisha, where the existing Tanishq store was totally reimagined to a much, much bigger size. So therefore, the strategic importance of that may be missed in the number.
Yeah. So just to bring up that point, for example, in quarter one, while we opened three new stores, all of them bigger size than earlier, we also relocated or expanded significantly about eight other stores, which is part of the retail transformation program that's going on. All of that is really helping on increasing the total retail capacity in terms of square feet.
So we can highlight this, Venkatesh, in a better way maybe. Just think about it. Yeah, so that was just an additional point.
Great, thanks, and wish you all the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amit Sachdeva from UPS. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, and thank you so much for taking my question. So my question is on the studded growth, which is 11%, and I think it's been going on in the same range for last two, three quarters. But surprisingly, CaratLane continues to grow strongly in thirties, and you also make a point that premium solitaires there are up 60%. And you also sort of, you know, given a mix of revenue in the slide, which is studded versus, you know, gold, and that includes CaratLane, the numbers seems to be unchanged. But then does it signal that, in the studded segment, the ticket sizes now are coming down? And is there something consumer trends are telling us at Tanishq or, you know, Zoya level or at least the premium formats level, while the market is going towards more affordable diamond jewelry? How should we see the trend? And could you also update what is the diamond overall market would be in India level, studded market, and how the market growth is happening?
Okay. Many questions rolled in one, but at a broad level, Amit, studded market, our best estimate, and this could vary based on whom you ask the question to, is say around 75,000 crores, give or take here and there, okay? Last year, I think we did around, in Tanishq, Mia, Zoya, and if I were to add CaratLane, put together maybe around 17,000 crores-18,000 crores, okay? And maybe something like that, but you can pick the figures there. Now, is the market growing? The studded market is certainly growing overall. In fact, even if you listen to what De Beers, et cetera, commentary, India is probably one of those few markets which is growing in studded, and we are now the second largest market for diamonds in the world. Now, the question that you're asking is there a studded... You know, we've been seeing a slightly dichotomous behavior in the last two levels. One is between solitaires and non-solitaires. We saw the correction happen in solitaires, particularly in the higher caratage, because of the price uncertainties that the media narrative also played out. That has now stabilized, because now that is in the base. Okay? And therefore, last year, if I were to look at it, the studded jewelry grew better than solitaires. Now that bit has got equalized, if you ask me. Now, the second piece is on price. The other dichotomous behavior that we saw was on price band. In fact, I was mentioning this even earlier, that in this quarter, as well as last year, we actually saw better buyer growth in studded than in gold. So actually, number of customers is there. Now, the value piece, as you had rightly pointed out, is it that people are migrating to a lower price band? I'm not so sure about that. I think a lot more newer customers are coming in, who come in at the lower price band, given India's demography, given, you know, lot of young working women, people wanting every day. So I think that segment is certainly growing. The higher value segment, if I look at it, is doing pretty well. If I look at the 5 lakh plus, for example. In Tanishq as well as in Zoya, we are seeing fairly good growths. In the sub 2 lakhs, if I look at Tanishq, Mia, CaratLane put together, the portfolio is growing fairly well. Some gives or takes may be happening between the three, let's say, formats and three retail chains or the three brands. I don't see that as a big issue. Value growth will come. I believe if we are able to excite the customer, even in the 2 lakh to 8 lakh space, where I think a large number of customers today would be ready to buy. So I think a lot of it is to do with market development, and that's an opportunity and an agenda for us.
Got it. All right, thanks.
One other thing I think for all of us also to think about, so the association of CaratLane with Tanishq has been there for so many years, and therefore, somebody who is buying a CaratLane is well buying also into the Tanishq sub-brand, whatever you call it. And therefore, while from a standalone point of view, we look at the jewelry division of Titan Company, and from a total point of view, we look at CaratLane as a subsidiary, the customer is looking at the choices from the same company in a way. And therefore, that 11 of Tanishq can maybe 25 of Mia and the 35 of CaratLane, all that is from a price point of view, you have to integrate and see, and not how come CaratLane is growing at 35 while Tanishq is growing at only at 11. Because in a way, many of the, what one would call a budget kind of customer of Titan Company is buying between Tanishq, CaratLane and Mia. And maybe more and more of them are buying Mia and CaratLane because those are primarily with that appeal. Whereas Tanishq is premium, higher value primarily. So those are the... So we have to see it together also.
Got it. No, that's very, very helpful, Venkat. Thanks so much for that. And can I just ask a small follow-up on, given the gold price is very high and most jewelers have tried to make a light jewelry and several SKU innovations to excite the buyers and including lower caratage, caratage as well. So my question is that has that changed some competitive dynamics on making charges? Just to get a sense of that, are you seeing at the margin things are same or has that been a little bit more intense on pricing front?
I'm not sure if the two are connected. We'll reflect on it. But one thought which you said that lighter weight and perhaps lower carats also. Even in gold, we have experimented with 18 carat in certain markets and we have seen a good response to that. Therefore, we see greater opportunity in studded, 18 carat going to 14 carat and then Shaman talked about 14 going to 9. So lower carats are being accepted in the market. So that's one route. Lower weight is another route. In gold also. Okay. The second part of the piece on making charges, I think as the gold prices have gone up, there is a sliding effect on the customer's willingness to pay for more complex products, higher making charges. So even at the higher price point, some customers are preferring to go towards slightly lower complexity products and therefore the making charges do come under pressure sometimes there. So I think it's more to do with gold prices at the high levels they are. And making charges, yeah, that will perennially remain, but it is more or less same like what it was before between us and competition.
Just one point which I wanted to add on previous conversation which was happening and Venkat was saying, if you see amid this time the disclosure the way we have made in quarterly update as well as in our presentation where we are bringing the whole jewelry including CaratLane and international piece separately, just to bring that point also alive that there might be interplay between Mia, Tanishq, CaratLane on certain segment and we need to start looking at totality. And you would have also noticed that international business has actually turned positive operating profit in this quarter. So the whole change in disclosure also is intended to drive that point that we need to start looking the revenue growth and overall margin, etc. in that manner. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Ashok. This is very helpful. Thank you so much for the disclosure as well. It is very, very helpful. And thank you so much for the detailed answers. Thank you, Ajay, and thank you, Venkat. Thank you, Ashok. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. A question on lab-grown diamonds. I know we have been discussing this on and off in the quarterly calls. But I think it's been probably 4 or 5 quarters since we all first raised the question as to how Titan is looking at LGD and whether it wants to have a play in this or not. We are seeing now news items on several relatively small but PE-funded players who are going to set up LGD stores. Over the next couple of years, we will have significant supply coming into the Indian retail market. It's not as if LGD is not available now, but proper retail frontage, enough number of touch points, square feet, etc. That we have not seen till now, which I think over the next 2 years will come in. So the question is, do we want to participate in that at all or that's something that because we are a natural diamond player, we don't want to get into that, and we believe that while they might garner a certain amount of sales, we will focus only on the other part of the market. So just some thoughts here.
No, I think the push has been coming from your cohort, from all the analysts, etc., more often, and because there's a lot of media narrative. I will make two or three comments. After that, you know, you can draw your conclusion. One is that, let's be honest, today, despite 50 odd players and maybe more coming in, and 100 plus stores and several online players as well, the narrative is far larger than the reality. The reality is that the lab-grown market estimated by us is less than 2% of the total diamond studded market as we speak. Okay, it could go up, of course, in the future. Nobody is denying that. But this is where it stands. This is a hard reality check. The second observation and comment I want to make is that prices of lab-grown diamonds have been coming down, retail prices as well, not just the wholesale price. Wholesale prices come down much faster. Retail prices in India are hovering between 30,000 to 50,000 rupees a carat. About a year ago, it was much, much higher. And every day, new players are launching, and they're coming in at lower price points as well. Entry barriers are rather low. Differentiation is also very limited, as we see in the market. So there is a very strong chance that unless you come up with a good IP, this could get a very commoditized play, where price point led, you know, bigger stone or more stones or more diamonds for less price is where it may head. A few players may land up differentiating, so we have to see. Consequently, unit economics at the store level can come under huge pressure. You're right, PE funds are backing, and therefore you may see a plethora of stores more coming up. Maybe another 100, 200 stores can easily come up in the next 1 year itself. I believe that will further commoditize the play. So for Titan to make a meaningful play, one, the consumer should be excited and there is something that she wants. Two, what is the IP that we can create? And three, unit economics have to start making sense. But we are not being dismissive of it. We are constantly watching, studying, analyzing, and really reading what's going on at the customer and the industry level. And therefore, you know, we'll see what to do. We'll reserve the right to play the way we want to play when we want to play.
Got it. Secondly, this 11% studded growth, is that number including CaratLane?
No. Excludes.
So, including CaratLane, I mean, as a company as a whole, what is your studded growth?
We'll just, we'll work out and send it to you. I mean, I don't know.
Venkatesh will kind of share that.
Okay. Because, see, I don't know if that 11 materially changes or maybe just goes up to a 12, 13 or something like that. But my question on this was that, see, we have traditionally always held that we are not too focused on the studded percentage because of gold inflation. Gold jewelry is selling more and that percentage has naturally come down. But we have a good absolute growth in studded. Now, that is not true for this quarter. So absolute growth itself is on the lower side. So what is driving this absolute growth to be low, and is it just a quarterly one-off or is there some pressures which can continue for a longer period of time?
Percy, you're very right on that first point that you mentioned. We were always focused on the studded growth. And the whatever is the consequent share because of higher gold thing, it's fine. So 11 is certainly low. The point that I was making and Ashok was also adding to is still valid, that whatever is the incremental extra growth that you add with CaratLane, we have to add. And we'll just add that and share with you. That may still not be, you know, that may not top 15, for example, which is lower than our normal growth rates, which is low. So nobody is...
So we'll
just confirm on that in a while. But the overall growth for Tanishq is lower than what we would like, without doubt. It is 16% including CaratLane, by the way. But the target for Tanishq is certainly more than 11, and we are behind on that. But I guess the overall consumption situation today is an issue. And this is playing in that consumption constraint situation. So obviously we have to innovate more, and the competitive intensity is also risen, and everybody is chasing diamond jewelry, I'm sure, for profit reasons and all that. You know, these are general statements without any, you know, connecting the dots, but they are real. Even if I cannot connect the dots, they are real because customers are exposed to constraints on the pocket, I mean the money, and of course choices from the competition side. So obviously the company and the Tanishq brand need to innovate more, execute better to grow. So that's the only comment I would make on this.
Understood. And one last follow-up on the first question on the LGD part. See, just your take on this, because right now the situation is too nascent and we don't have any real data. So I'm just asking your take on it for the future. Basically, see, in US, etc., we have seen LGD penetrate into mainly the solitaire category and take a substantial share of the solitaire category. In India, the solitaire category is quite small. We are a small diamonds market. But even in a small diamond market, there is a significant price arbitrage. So let's say a piece which costs 80,000 rupees in a natural diamond, that similar kind of piece in LGD might cost, let's say, 30,000-35,000 in the LGD segment. So the Indian consumer being a little more price sensitive, especially at the slightly lower end, of course, a 5 lakh, 10 lakh customer is not going to shift because he might be interested in natural diamonds only. But let's say a customer in that price point of 70,000 to 1 lakh, is it likely that if he's getting it at 50-60% cheaper, that he might shift to LGD? Even if, let's say, the business economics of LGD as a business is not very attractive, but what is your take on the market share loss that you might suffer because of this phenomenon?
So, you know, what you asked is a logical assumption, but what we find interestingly is the people who are initially considering and exploring LGDs are the ones who are already accomplished diamond buyers. They already have enough naturals. They may be, they are people who could otherwise easily afford 3 lakh, 5 lakh, 10 lakh products. And they are the ones who are saying, okay, why not a little bit? I'll also take some of this because they can carry off. Second piece is, even in India, the early adopters are the ones who are looking at solitaires and bigger stones because the arbitrage is much larger. And in the 70,000-80,000 or let's say sub 1 lakh space, the kind of customer who's there is also... Many of them are saying that if I'm buying something which is, you know, a studded jewelry, I might as well buy the natural thing and the real thing because it holds value, and I don't want to be, she's not yet comfortable migrating wholesale to LGD because it's a little confusing to her as to whether this will hold value and whether it's a real thing. So it's really the nature of customers who are currently buying their additional purchases by people who are already in the diamond segment. And new buyers, very few may be going to LGD. The new studded buyers are still preferring the naturals.
One of the markers of affluence, moving into a higher status in life, is also diamond jewelry. And a lot of households and a lot of women in India, in every society which has gone through this affluence from $5,000 to $8,000 and so on per capita, have gone through this. And therefore, the Indian women are waiting to buy the diamond jewelry at 1 lakh because most of the first-time buyers buy at 1 lakh and not at 5 lakh. So therefore, that first-time buyer at 1 lakh is looking for the real thing. And therefore, because if that was the case and with a lot of these brands and stores operating, the sale of LGD should be something else than 2% that Ajoy is referring to.
Right. Well, very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nihal Mahesh Jham from HSBC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, good evening, team. I had a follow-up question on LGDs itself, or more on the studded part. That if I look at for the last four quarters, even adjusting this quarter, say, for the numbers given, including CaratLane, just looking at Tanishq, there has been a moderation in the studded growth. So just wanted to understand the reasons as per you. Is it maybe a case of LGDs, which you said is not the case, or is it more a case that as diamond prices have not seen any appreciation or they have been contracting over the last 24 months, that is in a way making people not being very keen in terms of investing in diamond or investing in diamond pieces?
See, last year, because I think I've shared this before, but I'll repeat here. Last year, the studded growth in value was impacted because of solitaires underperforming, in fact, showing a decline, especially the 1 carat plus and 1.5, 2 carat plus. If I go back a few years, that was a very small part or almost a negligible part of our business. We, in fact, grew the solitaire business 3x in a few years, in 2 or 3 years. And on that base, there was a correction because there was a issue of what will the price of that solitaire be going forward, thanks to the strong media narrative. And therefore, amongst a certain cohort of people, including some of us here around this table and yourselves on the call, there is this overriding feeling that, oh, now diamond does not hold value, so therefore I should. But that is a very, very small part of the, you know, total diamond buying segment in India. And it was largely on the solitaire. So if I exclude the solitaires, actually diamond business grew pretty well in line with what, you know, you would expect last year. If I include solitaires, the higher value, yes, to that extent it has played a certain role. This year, in the first quarter, I'm delinking last year's and this year's. This year, now that base effect of the solitaire is no longer there. This year, it's a different reason, as you know, we explained earlier, and Venkat also talked about the fact that there is a consumption-related challenge, and we have to figure out how to innovate and excite the customer, especially in the 1 lakh plus, 2 lakh plus segment. And in a way, gain share of wallet.
Yeah, like today's paper, you know, 25% growth in international travel in FY24. 25%. So, and a lot of people, I remember over the decades, two decades, conversations with customers would say, should I buy that 3 lakh necklace for myself or should we travel together as family to Thailand? Kind of thing, you know. So, in a way, this discretionary expenditure basket is a wide basket.
Yeah.
So it's a very complex thing. And therefore, as the jewelry becomes really at the top of the list, must buy if I have money, then the woman will buy this instead of going to Thailand, you know, so that something like that.
Yeah, so I still feel, given the spread of our business across markets and different segments, clearly LGD is not the cause for any, because that's still so small, it will not account for any of this, even at a buyer level.
Understood. One point here, when you're saying the 2% share in value, would it be better to look at it from a caratage perspective? Because it's at the end of it, 1/5 the price. So 10% of the total caratage is maybe a decent start. Just asking your opinion on that.
I don't have a figure to give you, boss. These estimates are very wild. And sure, without data, it would be crazy to give you any response on this. Whether it's 2, 5, 10, 8, 6, no idea.
Point again. Just one last question on the margin bit to Ashok, that this quarter, despite, say, standard going lower, a very high share of gold coin sales, as you highlighted, our margins are flat in jewelry, excluding the one-off benefit. So, mainly operating leverage or some optimization of advertising, given the Festival of Diamonds spends happens in Q2. If you could just give some highlights.
Gold coin share has remained elevated for some time. So, it's not that extraordinary in this quarter vis-a-vis earlier quarters. We explained that 50 basis point is, of course, one-off and it will reverse itself. And rest is all very, very small stock, inventory, changes, which has come. And nothing worth, you know, making them definite reason for this quarter, because, so that is where I will leave this. And that is why when the question was that, should we start thinking about higher level of band, I still don't want to, you know, kind of guide you to that. It is still 11 to 11.5 and which side of the band, given the market reality, volatility and gold prices, we will ultimately land up We don't know. And at the same time, to one question which came that, and Ajoy clarified, the growth and market share remains our top priority. So some tactical investment, if required, we will not constrain ourselves that we are going to breach 11%, and whatever is the right for the business will be done.
Yeah, and sometimes some timing of costs may also affect us between quarters, you know. So I wouldn't read too much into one quarter's exact figure. And last year quarter might have had some other timing issue. This year quarter may have some other timing issue. So I think it's better to look at it over a slightly larger number of quarters.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Abhijit Kundu from Antique Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. It was just more of a accounting question. In both jewelry, there is a 50 basis points impact of hedging, and in watches, there is a sort of a 400 basis points benefit of revaluation of revaluation, which you said will, you know, reverse in the forthcoming quarters. So from a modeling angle, when we have to say take recurring PAT or recurring EBIT, if this is reversing, then we don't have to, we can consider it in the recurring PAT rate. I mean recurring PAT and recurring EBIT rate, the both this one time items. If they are going
to reverse, in quarter two and quarter three, it will be opposite impact, and that is where someone asks about watch. After adjusting, it is becoming 18%, but this 4% also will further reverse. So 18 has to come down, and that is where I guided mid-teen is much more reasonable expectation from watch division. It could be 16, I don't know. It could be 14, but mid-teen ballpark is fine. And for the same thing, jewelry, sometime it may happen that, there are so many things very difficult to predict, particularly on some of these aspects, that while this is reversing and something else is kind of offsetting that. So we will discuss more if that happens. But yeah, these things would reverse. Jewelry certainly in quarter two and quarter three would reverse. Watches would take the same time period. So next two quarters will have these opposite direction movement on EBIT margin pressure, and that you must account for your account keeping or bookkeeping, whatever you want to do that.
And you would be specifying that whatever reversals happen in the second and third quarter, that would be the way you have given it.
It has to reverse. There is no way. But what happens during the quarter, again, few things gets created and slightly complex. I don't want to end the call with, a very complex explanation where we go out of the call not that delighted, which you should all be delighted, and we are feeling delighted about the performance. But the point is that all the outstanding forwards and future where MTM benefit came this time, it has to reverse when these forwards and future gets squared up. But there would be new set of forwards and future, and which direction they will operate, we don't know. Nowadays, these are not very meaningful differences once we move to fair value accounting of hedge accounting of inventory, but still there are some minor differences keep cropping up depending on volatility of prices, et cetera, because the basis for evaluation of forward future and inventory are two different bases. They are not the same basis, and that creates this kind of differences in these numbers. But if, something is worth calling out, we will certainly call out. Okay?
Okay, got it. Thank you. And congrats on a great set of numbers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for the day. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Venkataraman for closing comments.
Thank you very much, everyone. See you in the next quarter.
Yeah.
Thank you. On behalf of Titan Company Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect the lines.